I've wanted to see you for so long. Victor's voice was gentle, as it had been on the phone, as if he were talking to a child. I know, Robert. I missed you too.
Are you staying? Can you come back and stay with me?
Part of me wanted to snap that that was a ridiculous idea, but the desperation in Robert's voice sparked a tiny bit of pity in me. I remained silent, simply watching the drama before me unfold.
I'd hide you. It'd be great. Just the two of us?
Victor hesitated. He wasn't stupid. Despite my vague claims on the plane, he knew the odds of me letting him go were non-existent.
I don't know, he said quietly. I don't know.
The waiter's arrival jolted us out of our haze, and we all ordered drinks. Adrian ordered a gin and tonic and wasn't even carded. I wasn't sure if it was because he looked 21 or was convincing enough with spirit. Regardless, I wasn't thrilled about it. Alcohol muted spirit. We were in a precarious situation, and I would have liked him at full strength. Of course, considering he'd been drinking earlier, it probably didn't matter now. After the waiter left, Robert seemed to notice the rest of us. His eyes passed over Eddie quickly, sharpened at Lissa and Adrian, and lingered on me for a long time. I stiffened, not liking the scrutiny. He finally turned back to his brother.
Who have you brought, Victor?
Robert still had that oblivious, scattered air to him, but it was lit with suspicion now. Fear and paranoia.
Who are these children? Two spirit users and...
His gaze fell on me again. He was reading my aura.
One of the Shadow-Kissed?
For a moment, I was astonished at his use of the term. Then I remembered what Mark, Oksana's husband, had told me. Mark had once been bonded to a Dampier, and that Dampier had died, drastically speeding up the deterioration of Robert's mind.
They're friends, said Victor smoothly. Friends who would like to talk to you and ask you some questions.
Robert frowned.
You're lying. I can tell. And they don't consider you a friend. They're tense. They keep their distance from you.
Victor didn't deny the friend claim.
Nonetheless, they need your help, and I promised it to them. It was the price for me being allowed to visit you. You shouldn't have made promises for me.
Robert's napkin was now in shreds. I kind of wanted to give him mine.
But didn't you want to see me?
Asked Victor winningly. His tone was warm, his smile almost genuine. Robert looked troubled, confused. I was again reminded of a child, and was starting to have my doubts that this guy had ever transformed a Strigoi. He was spared an answer yet again when our drinks arrived. None of us had even picked up our menus, much to the waiter's obvious annoyance. He left, and I opened mine without really seeing it. Victor then introduced us to Robert, as formally as he might at any diplomatic function. Prison hadn't dulled his sense of royal etiquette. Victor gave first names only. Robert turned back to me, that frown still on his face, and glanced between Lissa and me. Adrian had said that whenever we were together, our auras showed that we were linked.
A bond. I've almost forgotten what it was like. But Alden, I've never forgotten Alden.
His eyes grew dreamy and almost vacant. He was reliving a memory. I'm sorry, I said, surprised to hear the sympathy in my words. This was hardly the harsh interrogation I'd envisioned. I can only imagine what it must have been like, losing him. The dreamy eyes grew sharp and hard.
No, you cannot. It's like nothing you can imagine. Nothing. Right now, you have the world, a universe of senses beyond those of others, an understanding of another person that no one can have. To lose that, to have that ripped away, it would make you wish for death.
Wow, Robert was really good at killing conversation, and we all kind of sat there hoping the waiter would return this time. When he did, we all made half-hearted attempts at ordering food, except Robert. Most of us deciding on the spot. The restaurant served Asian cuisine, and I ordered the first thing I saw on the menu, an egg roll sampler. With food ordered, Victor continued taking the firm hand with Robert that I seemed incapable of managing.
Will you help them? Will you answer their questions?
I had a feeling that Victor was pushing Robert on this, not so much as a way to pay back us rescuing him, but rather because Victor's scheming nature was dying to know everyone's secrets and motivations. Robert sighed. Whenever he looked at Victor, there was such a strong expression of devotion and even idol worship. Robert probably couldn't refuse his brother anything. He was the perfect type to play into Victor's plans, and I realized I should possibly be grateful that Robert had grown unstable. If he'd been in full control of his powers, Victor would never have bothered with Lyssa last time. He would have already had his own private spirit wielder to use however he wanted.
"What do you want to know?"
asked Robert blearily. He addressed me, apparently recognizing my leadership. I glanced at my friends for moral support, and received none. Neither Lyssa nor Adrian approved of this mission in the first place, and Eddie still didn't know its purpose. I swallowed, steeling myself, and directed my full attention to Robert. "We heard you freed Estragoy once, that you were able to convert him, or her, back to their original state." Surprise flashed on Victor's usually composed face. He certainly hadn't expected this.
"Where did you hear this?" demanded Robert.
"From a couple I met in Russia. Their names are Mark and Oksana."
"Mark and Oksana."
Again, Robert's gaze slipped away for a moment. I had a feeling this happened a lot, that he didn't spend much time in reality.
"I didn't know they were still together."
"They are. They're doing really great. I needed him back in the present."
"Is it true? Did you do what they said? Is it possible?"
Robert's responses were always preceded by a pause.
"Her."
"Huh?"
"It was a woman. I freed her."
I gasped in spite of myself, hardly daring to process his words.
"You're lying."
It was Adrian who spoke, his tone harsh. Robert glanced at him with an expression amused and scornful.
"And who are you to say that? How can you tell? You've bruised and abused your power so much it's a wonder you can even touch the magic anymore. And all these things you do to yourself, it doesn't truly help, does it? Spirit's punishment still affects you. Soon you won't be able to tell reality from dream."
The words stunned Adrian for a moment, but he kept going.
"I don't need any physical signs to see that you're lying. I know you are because what you're describing is impossible. There's no way to save Estragoy. When they're gone, they're gone. They're dead. Undead. Forever. That which is dead doesn't always stay dead."
Robert's words weren't directed at Adrian. They were spoken to me. I shivered.
"How? How did you do it? With a stake? She was killed with a stake and in doing so was brought back to life."
"Okay," I said. "That is a lie. I've killed plenty of Estragoy with stakes, and believe me, they stay dead."
"Not just any stake."
Robert's fingers danced along the edge of his glass.
"A special stake."
"A stake charmed with spirit," said Lyssa suddenly.
He lifted his eyes to her and smiled. It was a creepy smile.
"Yes, you are a clever, clever girl. A clever, gentle girl, gentle and kind. I can see it in your aura."
I stared off at the table, my mind in overdrive. A stake charmed with spirit. Silver stakes were charmed with the four main Moroi elements: earth, air, water, and fire. It was that infusion of life that destroyed the undead force within Estragoy. With our recent discovery of how to charm objects with spirit, infusing a stake had never even occurred to us. Spirit healed. Spirit had brought me back from the dead. In joining with the other elements within a stake, was it truly possible that the twisted darkness that gripped Estragoy could be obliterated, thus restoring that person to their rightful state? I was grateful for the food's arrival because my brain was still moving sluggishly. The egg rolls provided a welcome opportunity to think.
"Is it really that easy?"
I asked at last. Robert scoffed.
"It's not easy at all.
But you just said we need a spirit-charmed stake, and then I kill Estragoy with it."
Or, well, not kill. The technicalities were irrelevant. His smile returned.
"Not you. You can't do it."
"Then who?"
I stopped. the rest of my words dying on my lips. No. No.
The Shadowkissed don't have the gift of life. Only the spirit-blessed, he explained. The question is, who's capable of doing it? Gentle girl or drunken sod?
His eyes flicked between Lissa and Adrian.
My wager would be on gentle girl.
Those words were what snapped me out of my stunned state. In fact, they were what shattered this whole thing, this far-fetched dream of saving Dimitri.
No, I repeated, even if it was possible, and I'm not sure if I believe you. She can't do it. I won't let her.
And in a turn of events almost as astonishing as Robert's revelation, Lissa spun toward me, anger flooding our bond.
And since when can you tell me what I can or can't do?
Since I don't recall you ever taking guardian training and learning to stake a Strigoi, I returned evenly, trying to keep my voice calm.
You only punched Reed, and that was hard enough.
When Avery Lazar had tried to take over Lissa's mind, she'd sent her Shadowkiss brother to do some dirty work. With my help, Lissa had punched him and kept him away. It had been beautifully executed, but she'd hated it.
I did it, didn't I? She exclaimed.
Liss, throwing a punch is nothing like staking a Strigoi, and that's not even counting the fact that you have to get near one in the first place. You think you could get in range before one bit you or snapped your neck? No.
I'll learn.
The determination in her voice, and mine, was admirable, but it took guardians decades to learn what we did, and plenty still got killed. Adrian and Eddie looked uncomfortable in the midst of our bickering, but Victor and Robert seemed both intrigued and amused. I didn't like that. We weren't here for their entertainment. I tried to deflect the dangerous topic by turning back to Robert. If a spirit user brought back a Strigoi, then that person would become Shadowkissed. I didn't point out the obvious conclusion to Lissa. Part of what had driven Avery crazy, aside from normal spirit usage, had been bonding with more than one person. Doing so created a very unstable situation that rapidly led all people involved into darkness and insanity. Robert's eyes grew dreamy as he stared beyond me.
Bonds form when someone dies, when their soul has actually left and moved on to the world of the dead. Bringing it back is what makes them Shadowkissed. Death's mark is upon them.
His gaze suddenly snapped onto me,
just as it is on you.
I refused to avoid his eyes, despite the chill his words sent through me. Strigoi are dead. Saving one would mean its soul was brought back from the world of the dead, too.
No, he argued. Their souls do not move on. Their souls linger, neither in this world nor the next. It's wrong and unnatural. It's what makes them what they are. Killing or saving a Strigoi sends the soul back to a normal state. There is no bond.
Then there's no danger, Lissa said to me.
Aside from a Strigoi killing you, I pointed out.
Rose,
we'll finish this conversation later. I gave her a hard look. We held each other's gazes a moment, and then she turned to Robert. There was still an obstinacy in the bond I didn't like.
How do you charm the stake?
She asked him.
I'm still learning.
I again started to chastise her, and then thought better of it. Maybe Robert was wrong. Maybe all it actually took to convert a Strigoi was a spirit-infused stake. He only thought a spirit user had to do it because he had done it. Allegedly. Besides, I'd much rather Lissa preoccupy herself with charming than fighting. If the charm part sounded too hard, she might have to give up altogether. Robert glanced at me, and then Eddie.
One of you must have a stake on you. I'll show you.
You can't take a stake out in public, exclaimed Adrian, in what was a remarkably wise observation. It might be weird for humans, but it's still obvious that it's a weapon.
He's right, Eddie said.
We could go back to the room after dinner, said Victor. He had that perfectly pleasant and bland look on his face. I studied him, hoping my expression showed my distrust. Even with her zeal, I could sense the hesitation in Lissa, too. She wasn't keen on following any suggestion of Victor's. We'd seen in the past how desperately far Victor would go in attempting to fulfill his plans. he'd convinced his own daughter to turn Strigoi and help him escape jail. For all we knew, he was planning the same for...
That's it!
I gasped, feeling my eyes go wide as I stared at him.
That's what?
Victor asked.
That's why you had Natalie turn. You thought... You knew about this. What Robert had done. You were going to use her Strigoi strength and then have him turn her back.
Victor's already pale face went paler, and he seemed to age before our eyes. His smug look disappeared, and he looked away.
Natalie is dead and long gone, he said stiffly. There's no point in discussing her.
Some of us made an attempt to eat after that, but my egg roll seemed tasteless now. Lissa and I were thinking the same thing. Among all of Victor's sins, I'd always considered him convincing his own daughter to turn Strigoi to be the most awful. It was what had really sealed the deal for me about him being a monster. Suddenly, I was forced to reevaluate things, forced to reevaluate him. If he'd known he could bring her back, it made what he had done terrible, but not as terrible. He was still evil in my mind, no question. But if he had believed he could bring Natalie back, then that meant he believed in Robert's power. There was still no way I was letting Lissa near Strigoi, but this incredible tale had become slightly more credible. I couldn't let it go without further investigation.
We can go up to the room after this, I said at last, but not for long.
My words were to Victor and Robert. Robert seemed to have faded into his own world again, but Victor nodded. I gave Eddie a quick glance and got a curt nod of a different sort from him. He understood the risk in taking the brothers to a private place. Eddie was telling me he would be extra vigilant, not that he wasn't already. By the time we finished dinner, Eddie and I were both rigid and tense. He walked near Robert, and I stayed by Victor. We kept Lissa and Adrian between the brothers. Yet even keeping close, it was hard as we cut through the crowded casino. People stopped in our path, walked around us, through us. It was chaos. Twice our group got split by oblivious tourists. We weren't too far from the elevators, but I was getting uneasy about the possibility of Victor or Robert running off through the mob of people.
We need to get out of this crowd,
I shouted over to Eddie. He gave me another of his quick nods and took an abrupt left that caught me by surprise. I steered Victor in that same direction, and Lissa and Adrian sidestepped to keep up with us. I was puzzled until I saw that we were approaching a hall with an emergency exit sign on it. Away from the busy casino, the noise level dimmed.
Figure there are probably stairs here, Eddie explained.
Crafty guardian, I flashed him a smile. Another turn showed us a janitorial closet on our right, and ahead of us, a door with a symbol for stairs. The door appeared to lead both outside and to upper floors.
Brilliant, I said.
You're like on the 10th floor,
pointed out Adrian. It was the first time he'd spoken in a while.
Nothing like a little exercise to...
Damn! I came to an abrupt halt in front of the door. It had a small warning sign saying that an alarm would go off if the door was opened. Figures.
Sorry,
said Eddie, like he was personally responsible.
Not your fault, I said, turning.
Back we go. We'd have to take our chances in the crowd. Maybe the roundabout detour had tired Victor and Robert out enough to make escape unappealing. Neither of them was that young anymore, and Victor was still in bad shape. Lissa was too tense to think much about being led around, but Adrian gave me a look that clearly said he thought this traipsing was a waste of his time. Of course, he thought this whole robber thing was a waste of time. I was honestly surprised he was coming with us at all back to the room. I would have expected him to stay in the casino with his cigarettes and another drink. Eddie, leading our group, took a few steps back toward the casino down the hallway, and then it hit me.
Stop!
I screamed. He responded instantly, coming to a halt in the narrow space. A bit of confusion followed. Victor stumbled into Eddie in surprise, and then Lissa stumbled into Victor. Instinct made Eddie reach for his stick, but mine was already out. I'd grabbed it as soon as the nausea had swept me. There was Strigoi between us and the casino.
Chapter 10.
And one of them... No, I breathed. Even as I sprang toward the one closest to me, a woman, there appeared to be three Strigoi around us. Eddie was in motion, too, and both of us were trying to shove the Moroi behind us. They didn't need much urging. At the sight of Strigoi, the Moroi had begun to back up, creating sort of a bottleneck. Between Eddie's instant reflexes and the Moroi panic, I was pretty sure no one had noticed what I already had spotted. Dimitri was among them. No, 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 I said this time to myself. He'd warned me, over and over. He'd said in his letters that as soon as I was out of the safety of the wards, he would be coming for me. I'd believed him, and yet, seeing the reality of it was a totally different thing. It had been 3 months, but in that instant, a million memories ran through my mind in crystal clear sharpness. My captivity with Dimitri, the way his mouth, so, so warm, despite his cold skin, had kissed mine. The feel of his fangs pressing into my neck and the sweet bliss that followed. He looked exactly the same, too, with that chalky white pallor and red-ringed eyes that so conflicted with the soft, chin-length brown hair and otherwise gorgeous lines of his face. He even had a leather duster on. It had to be a new one, seeing as his previous coat had gotten pretty torn up in our last fight on the bridge. Where did he keep getting them? Get out! I yelled. My words were to the Moroi, even as my stake bit into the female Strigoi's heart. The momentary confusion with all of us in the hall had been more of a detriment to her than me. I got a good line of sight on her, and it was clear that she hadn't expected me to be so fast. I'd killed a lot of Strigoi because they'd underestimated me. Eddie didn't have my luck. He stumbled when Victor shoved past him, allowing the other Strigoi, a guy, near the front to backhand Eddie against the wall. Still, that was the kind of thing we faced all the time, and Eddie responded beautifully. He immediately came back from the hit, and with the Moroi out of the way now, Eddie was able to lunge toward the Strigoi and engage him fully. And me? My attention was on Dimitri. I stepped over the fallen Strigoi without even looking at her. Dimitri had hovered near the back, sending his minions into the front lines of battle. Maybe it was because I knew Dimitri so well, but I suspected he wasn't surprised that I'd take out the one so quickly and that Eddie was giving the other a tough time. I doubted Dimitri cared whether they lived or died. They were just distractions for him to get to me.
I told you, said Dimitri,
eyes both amused and sharp. He was watching my every move, each of us subconsciously mirroring the other as we waited for an opening to attack.
I told you I'd find you.
Yeah? I said, trying to ignore the grunts of Eddie and the other Strigoi. Eddie could take him. I knew he could.
I got the memos.
A ghost of a smile curled up Dimitri's lips, showing the fangs that somehow triggered a mix of both longing and loathing in me. Instantly, I shoved those feelings aside. I'd hesitated before with Dimitri, and nearly died because of it. I'd refused to let it happen again. And the adrenaline pumping through my body served as a good reminder that this was a do-or-die situation. He made the first move, but I dodged it, almost having sensed it coming. That was the problem with us. We knew each other too well, knew each other's moves too well. Of course, that hardly meant we were an even match. Even in life, he'd had more experience than me, and his Strigoi abilities tipped the scale.
Yet here you are,
he said, still smiling.
Foolishly stepping outside when you should have stayed in the safety of court. I couldn't believe it when my spies told me.
I said nothing, instead attempting a swipe with my stake. He saw that coming too and sidestepped it. His having spies didn't surprise me, even in the daytime. He controlled a network of Strigoi and humans alike, and I'd known he had eyes and ears observing court. The question was, how the hell had he gotten into this hotel in the middle of the day? Even with human watchers at the airport or monitoring credit cards as Adrian had done, Dimitri and his Strigoi friends should have had to wait until nightfall to get here. No, not necessarily, I realized a moment later. Strigoi occasionally had workarounds, trucks and vans with dark, completely sealed cabins, underground entrances. Moroi wanting to casino jump from the witching hour knew about secret tunnels connecting certain buildings. Dimitri would have known about all this, too. If he'd been waiting for me to come outside of wards, he would have done whatever it took to get to me. I knew better than anyone else how resourceful he was. I also knew he was trying to distract me with talking.
"And strangest of all," he continued, "you didn't come alone. You brought Malroy. You've always taken risks with your own life, but I didn't expect you to be so hasty with theirs."
Something occurred to me then. Aside from the faint hum of the casino on the other end of the hallway and the sounds of our fight, everything else was silent. We were missing an important noise, say like the alarm from a fire door.
"Lissa," I yelled, "get the hell out of here! Get them all out of here!"
She should have known better. They all should have known better. That door led to the upper floors, and outdoors. The sun was still out. It didn't matter if the alarm brought hotel security down on us. Hell, that might scare the Strigoi off. What mattered was that the Malroy fled to safety. But a quick check of my bond told me the problem. Lissa was frozen, stunned. She'd suddenly seen who I was fighting, and the shock of it was too much. Knowing Dimitri was a Strigoi was one thing. Seeing it, really, really seeing it, well, that was different. I knew from personal experience. Even after being prepared, his appearance still unnerved me. She was blindsided, unable to think or move. It only took me a heartbeat to assess her feelings. But in a fight with a Strigoi, a single second could be the difference between life and death. Dimitri's chatter had worked, and although I watched him and thought I had my guard up, he got through and shoved me against the wall, hands pinning my arms so painfully that I lost my grip on the stake. He put his face right up to mine, so close that our foreheads touched.
"Rosa," he murmured.
His breath was warm and sweet against my skin. It seemed like it should have smelled like death or decay, but it didn't.
"Why? Why did you have to be so difficult? We could have spent eternity together."
My heart thundered in my chest. I was afraid, terrified of the death that I knew had to be seconds away. And at the same time, I was filled with sorrow over having lost him. Seeing the features of his face, hearing that same accented voice that even now wrapped around me like velvet, I felt my heart breaking all over again. Why? Why had this happened to us? Why was the universe so cruel? I managed to flip the switch again, once more shutting out the fact that this was Dimitri. We were predator and prey, and I was in danger of being eaten.
"Sorry,"
I said through gritted teeth, shoving hard and failing to break his grip. "My eternity doesn't involve being part of the undead mafia."
"I know," he said.
I could have sworn there was sadness in his face, but later convinced myself I must have imagined it.
"Eternity will be lonely without you."
A piercing shriek suddenly rang in my ears. Both of us winced. Noises intended to startle humans were hell on sensitive hearing like we had. Yet I couldn't help but feel relief. The fire door. Finally, those idiots, and yes, I had no qualms about calling my friends idiots when they were acting that way, had left the building. I felt sunlight through the bond, and took comfort in that as Dimitri's fangs neared the artery that would spill the life's blood from my neck. I hoped the alarm would distract him, but he was too good. I struggled once more, hoping I could use surprise on him, but it was to no avail. What did surprise him was Eddie's stake plunging into the side of his stomach. Dimitri snarled in pain and let go of me, turning on Eddie. Eddie's face was hard, unblinking. If seeing Dimitri fazed him, my friend didn't show it. For all I knew, Eddie wasn't even registering this as Dimitri. Probably all he saw was a Strigoi. It was the way we were trained. See monsters, not people. Dimitri's attention was off me for the moment. He wanted to draw out my death. Eddie was simply an annoyance he needed to rid us of so that he could continue the game. Eddie and Dimitri engaged in a dance, similar to the one I'd been in with Dimitri earlier, except that Eddie didn't know Dimitri's moves like I did, so Eddie wasn't able to completely avoid Dimitri grabbing him by the shoulder and shoving him to the wall. The maneuver had been intended to crush Eddie's skull, but Eddie managed to shift enough so that it was his body that took the brunt of the impact. It still hurt, but he was alive. All of this took place in milliseconds, and in those fleeting moments, my perspective shifted. When Dimitri had been looming over me, about to bite me. I had managed to overcome that impulse to think of him as Dimitri, the person I'd once known and loved. Continually forced into a victim position, with my life about to end, I had kept kicking myself into fight, fight, fight mode. Now, watching someone else battle Dimitri, seeing Eddie's stake snake out at him, well, suddenly, I lost that cool objectivity. I remembered why I'd come here. I remembered what we'd just learned from Robert. Fragile. It was still all so fragile. I'd sworn to myself that if we reached a moment where Dimitri was about to kill me, and I hadn't learned more about saving Strigoi, I would do it. I would kill him. And this was my chance. Between Eddie and me, we could take Dimitri down. We could end this evil state, just as he'd once wanted. Yet, less than a half hour ago, I'd been given a small piece of hope that a Strigoi could be saved. True, that part about a spirit user doing it was absurd, but Victor had believed, and if someone like him had believed... I couldn't do it. Dimitri couldn't die. Not yet. I shot out with my stake, a hard strike that raked the silver point against the back of Dimitri's head. He let out a roar of rage and managed to turn and push me off while still fending Eddie away. Dimitri was that good, but Eddie's stake was getting closer to Dimitri's heart, and my friend's gaze was unwavering, intent on his kill. Dimitri's attention flitted between the two of us, and in one small lapse, only half a breath long, I saw Eddie get a stake in the zone, ready to take a shot at Dimitri's heart, a shot that looked like it might succeed where mine had failed. And that was why, in one smooth motion, I struck out with my stake, swiping it against Dimitri's face and knocking Eddie's arm aside as I did. It was a beautiful face. I hated to mar it, but knew Dimitri would heal. As I made that attack, I pushed past him, shoving into Eddie so that he and I stumbled toward the fire door that was still shrieking its warning. Eddie's stony face registered surprise, and for a moment, we were deadlocked. Me pushing him to the door, and him pushing back toward Dimitri. I saw the hesitation, though. The positioning was off, and Eddie was on the verge of shoving me into a Strigoi, which his training wouldn't allow. Dimitri was already seizing the opportunity, though. His hand reached out and grabbed my shoulder, trying to jerk me back. Eddie caught hold of my arm and pulled me forward. I cried out in surprise and pain. It felt like they were going to rip me in two. Dimitri was by far the strongest, but even stuck in the middle, my weight played a role, and I lent my force to Eddie's, which helped us gain some ground. Still, it was slow going, like walking in honey. For each step I managed forward, Dimitri dragged me back. But Eddie and I were making slow and very, very painful progress toward the wailing door. A few moments later, I heard the clatter of feet and voices. "Security," grunted Eddie, giving me a tug. "Shit," I said.
"You can't win," Dimitri hissed.
He'd managed to get both hands on my shoulders now and was overpowering us.
"Oh yeah? We're about to have the entire Luxor attack squad here."
"We're about to have a pile of bodies here. Humans," he said dismissively.
Those humans reached us. I'm not sure what their impressions were. Some guy attacking teenagers. They shouted about us all letting go and facing them, directions the three of us ignored in our epic tug-of-war match. Then they must have laid hands on Dimitri. He was still gripping me, but his hold slackened enough that one huge pull from Eddie and a near leap on my part broke me free. Eddie and I didn't even look back, though the security guards were now shouting at us, too. They weren't the only ones shouting. Just before I pushed open the door, I heard Dimitri calling to me. There was laughter in his voice.
"It's not over, Rosa. Do you really think there's anywhere you can go in this world where I can't find you?"
The same warning. Always the same warning. I did my best to ignore the fear those words inspired. Eddie and I burst into smoggy desert air, as well as sunshine that was still hanging in there, despite being early evening. We were in the Luxor's parking lot, which wasn't crowded enough for us to hide in. With no spoken communication, he and I tore off toward the busy strip, knowing our physical abilities would surpass those of any human pursuers and let us get lost in the mobs of people. It worked. I never saw how many followed us. My guess was the security staff were devoting their attention to the tall guy killing people in their hotel. The voices shouting after us faded, and Eddie and I finally slowed to a stop in front of New York, New York, and again, without even talking, we immediately turned inside the hotel. It had a twisted layout and was more crowded than the Luxor, and we easily blended in until we could find an empty spot of wall on the far side of the hotel's casino. The run had been hard, even for us, and it took us a moment to catch our breath as we stood there. I knew things were serious when Eddie finally turned on me, and anger lit his features. Eddie was always the picture of calm and control, ever since his first abduction by Strigoi last year. It had toughened him, made him more determined to face any challenge. But oh, was he mad at me now.
"What the hell was that?" exclaimed Eddie. "You let him go!"
I put on my best tough face, but he seemed to be outdoing me today.
"What, did you miss the part where I was slashing him with my stake?" "I had his heart. I had a shot, and you stopped me."
"Security was coming. We didn't have time. We had to get out of there, and we couldn't let them see us do the killing."
"I don't think any of them are left to report seeing anything," Eddie replied evenly.
He seemed to be trying to regain his composure.
"Dimitri left a pile of corpses there. You know it. People died because you wouldn't let me stake him."
I flinched, realizing Eddie was right. It should have ended there. I hadn't gotten a good look at the number of security guards. How many had died? It wasn't relevant. Only the fact that innocent people had died mattered. Even one was too many. And it was my fault. My silence caused Eddie to press his advantage.
"How could you, of all people, forget that lesson? I know he used to be your instructor. Used to be. But he's not the same. They drilled that into us over and over. Don't hesitate. Don't think of him as a real person."
"I love him," I blurted out, without meaning to.
Eddie hadn't known. Only a handful of people knew about my romantic relationship with Dimitri and what had happened in Siberia.
"What?"
Eddie exclaimed with a gasp. His outrage had transformed to shock.
"Dimitri, he's more than my instructor."
Eddie continued staring at me for several heavy seconds.
"Was,"
he said at last.
"Huh?"
"He was more than your instructor. You loved him."
Eddie's momentary confusion was gone. He was back to hard guardian now, no sympathy.
"I'm sorry, but it's in the past. Whatever was between you, you have to know that. The person you loved is gone. The guy we just saw, not the same."
I slowly shook my head. I know. I know it's not him. I know he's a monster, but we can save him. If we can do what Robert was telling us about." Eddie's eyes widened, and for a moment, he was dumbstruck.
"That's what this is about? Rose, that's ridiculous. You can't believe that. Strigoi are dead. They're gone to us. Robert and Victor were feeding you a bunch of crap."
Now I grew surprised.
"Then why are you even here? Why have you stuck with us?"
He threw his hands up in exasperation.
"Because you're my friend. I stayed with you through all of this, breaking out Victor, listening to his crazy brother, because I knew you needed me. You all did, to help keep you safe. I thought you had a real reason for getting Victor out, and that you were going to return him. Does it sound crazy? Yeah, but that's normal for you. You've always had good reasons for what you do."
He sighed.
"But this is crossing a line. Letting Strigoi go in order to chase some idea? Some idea that couldn't possibly work. Is 10 times worse than what we did with Victor. 100 times worse. Every day Dimitri walks the world is another day that people are going to die."
I collapsed against the wall and closed my eyes, feeling sick to my stomach. Eddie was right. I had screwed up. I'd promised myself that I would kill Dimitri if I faced him before we could pursue Robert's solution. It all should have ended today. But I had choked up. Again. I opened my eyes and straightened up, needing to find a new purpose before I burst into tears in the middle of this casino.
"We have to find the others. They're out there unprotected."
It was probably the only thing that could have stopped Eddie's scolding just then. Instinctual duty kicked in. Protect Maroi.
"Can you tell where Lissa's at?"
My bond had kept me connected to her during our escape, but I hadn't allowed myself any deeper probing than confirming she was alive and okay. I expanded the link a little further now. Across the street, at MGM. I'd seen the ginormous hotel when we ran into this one, but hadn't realized Lissa was there. Now I could feel her, hiding out in a crowd like us. Scared, but not injured. I would have rather she and the others opted to hang out in the sun, but instinct had driven her to the shelter of walls. Eddie and I spoke no more about Dimitri as we headed out and crossed the busy road. The sky was turning peach, but I still felt secure out there. Far more secure than in the Luxor's hallway. With the bond, I could always find Lissa, and without any hesitation, I led Eddie through MGM's twists and turns. Honestly, the layout of these places just got more and more confusing, until we saw Lissa and Adrian standing near a row of slot machines. He was smoking. She spotted me, sprinted over, and threw her arms around me.
Oh my God! I was so scared. I didn't know what had happened to you guys. I hate that one-way bond.
I forced a smile for her. We're fine.
In a bruise kind of way,
mused Adrian, strolling over. I didn't doubt it. In the adrenaline of a fight, it was easy to not notice injuries and pain. Later, when the battle lust faded, you started to realize just what you'd put your body through. I was so grateful to see Lissa okay that I missed what Eddie had already noticed.
You guys, where are Victor and Robert?
Lissa's happy face crumpled, and even Adrian looked grim.
Damn it,
I said, needing no explanation. Lissa nodded, eyes wide and distraught.
We lost them.
Chapter 11. Well, how perfect. It took us a while to decide our next course of action. We tossed around a few feeble ideas to track Robert and Victor, all of which we eventually shot down. Robert's phone was a cell, and while the CIA could trace those kinds of things, we certainly couldn't. Even if Robert's address was listed in the phone book, I knew Victor wouldn't have let them go back there. And while Adrian and Lissa could spot a spirit user's aura, we could hardly go wandering aimlessly in a city and expect to find something. No, we were out of luck with those two. There was nothing to be done now but head back to court and face whatever punishment awaited us. I had screwed up. With sunset approaching, and seeing as we no longer had a known criminal to get us in trouble, my group glumly decided to head to the witching hour to make our travel plans. Lissa and I had the potential to be recognized over there, but runaway girls weren't quite in the same category as fugitive traitors. We decided to roll the dice, no pun intended, and hang around guardians rather than risk more Strigoi attacks before we could get out of Vegas. The witching hour was no different from any of the other casinos we'd been to, unless you knew what to look for. Humans there were too interested in the allure of the games and glitz to notice that a lot of the other patrons were uniformly tall, slim, and pale. As for the Dompiers, humans couldn't tell that we weren't human. It was only the uncanny sense Maroi and Dompiers had that let us know who was who. Sprinkled throughout the cheering, chattering, and, at times, wailing crowd were guardians. As in demand as guardians were, only a handful could be allocated full-time to a place like this. Fortunately, their numbers were reinforced by the wealthy and powerful who'd come to play. Excited Maroi whooped over slot machines or roulette while silent, watchful guardians hovered behind them, keeping an eye on everything. No Strigoi would come here.
What now?
Asked Lissa, almost yelling over the noise. It was the first time any of us had spoken since deciding to go here. We'd come to a halt near some blackjack tables, right in the thick of everything. I sighed. The mood was so dark. I didn't even need any spirit side effects. I lost Victor. I lost Victor. My own mental accusations were on an endless loop. We find their business center and book tickets out of here, I said. Depending on how long until we can catch a flight, we might have to get a room again. Adrian's eyes were scanning the action around us, lingering longest on one of the many bars.
Wouldn't kill us to spend a little time here,
I snapped.
Really? After everything that's happened, that's all you can think about?
His enraptured gaze turned back to me and became a frown.
There are cameras here. People who may recognize you.
Getting hard proof that you are in this casino and not Alaska is a good thing.
True, I admitted. I think Adrian's typical blasé air was masking discomfort. Aside from learning why I'd really come to Las Vegas, he'd also run into Strigoi, Dimitri among them. That was never an easy experience for any Maroi. Though we've got no alibi for when we were actually in Alaska.
So long as Victor doesn't get himself spotted around here, no one's going to make the connection.
Adrian's voice became bitter.
Which really shows how stupid they all are.
We helped put Victor away, said Lissa. No one would think we'd be crazy enough to let him out.
Eddie, staying silent, gave me a pointed look.
Then it's settled, said Adrian. Somebody go book us tickets. I'm going to get a drink and try my hand at some games. The universe owes me some good luck.
I'll get the tickets, said Lissa, scanning a sign that pointed out the directions for the pool, restrooms, and business center.
I'll go with you,
said Eddie. Whereas before his expression had been accusatory, he now seemed to be avoiding my eyes altogether.
Fine, I said, crossing my arms. Let me know when you're done and we'll find you. That was to Lissa, meaning she'd tell me through the bond. Convinced he was free, Adrian headed straight for the bar, me trailing after him.
A Tom Collins,
he told the Maroi bartender. It was like Adrian had a mental cocktail dictionary in his head and just checked them off one by one. I almost never saw him drink the same thing twice.
You want it spiked?
The bartender asked. He wore a crisp white shirt and black bow tie and hardly appeared older than me. Adrian made a face.
No.
The bartender shrugged and turned around to make the drink. Spiked was Maroi code for putting a shot of blood into the drink. There were a couple of doors behind the bar, ones that probably led to feeders. Glancing down the bar, I could see happy, laughing Maroi with red-tinged drinks. Some liked the thought of having blood with their alcohol. Most, like Adrian apparently, wouldn't take blood unless it was straight from the source. It supposedly didn't taste the same. While we waited, an older Maroi standing next to Adrian glanced over at me and nodded with approval.
You got yourself a good one,
he told Adrian.
Young, but that's the best way.
The guy, who was either drinking red wine or pure blood, jerked his head toward the others standing at the bar.
Most of these are used and washed up.
I followed his shrug, even though there was no need. Interspersed among the humans and Maroi were several Dampier women, dressed very glamorously in silk and velvet dresses that left little to the imagination. Most were older than me. Those who weren't had a weary look in their eyes, despite their flirtatious laughter. Blood whores. I glared at the Maroi.
Don't you dare talk about them like that, or I'll smash that wine glass in your face.
The guy's eyes widened, and he looked at Adrian.
Feisty. You have no idea, said Adrian.
The bartender returned with the Tom Collins.
She's had kind of a bad day.
The asshole Maroi guy didn't look back at me. He apparently didn't take my threat nearly as seriously as he should have.
Everyone's having kind of a bad day. You hear the news?
Adrian looked relaxed and amused as he sipped his drink, but standing so close to him, I felt him stiffen a little.
What news? Victor Dashkov. You know, that guy who kidnapped the Dragomir girl and was plotting against the queen? He escaped.
Adrian's eyebrows rose.
Escaped? That's crazy. I heard he was at some maximum security place. He was. No one really knows what happened. There were supposedly humans involved. And then the story gets weird.
How weird? I asked. Adrian slipped an arm around me, which I suspected was a silent message to let him do the talking. Whether that was because he believed that was proper blood whore behavior, or because he was worried I'd punch the guy, I couldn't say.
One of the guards was in on it, though he claims he was being controlled. He also conveniently says it's all a haze and he can't remember much. I heard it from some royals who are helping with the investigation.
Adrian laughed, taking down a big gulp of his drink.
That is convenient. Sounds like an inside job to me. Victor'd have a lot of money. Easy enough to bribe a guard. That's what I think happened.
There was a pleasant smoothness to Adrian's voice, and as a slightly dopey smile came over the other guy's face, I realized Adrian had pulled a little compulsion.
I bet you're right. You should tell your royal friends,
added Adrian.
An inside job.
The guy nodded eagerly.
I will.
Adrian held his gaze a few moments more and then finally glanced down to the Tom Collins. The glaze-eyed look faded from the man, but I knew Adrian's order to spread the inside job story would stick. Adrian gulped down the rest of the drink and set the empty glass on the bar. He was about to speak again when something across the room caught his attention. The Maroi man noticed too, and I followed both of their gazes to see what had them both so starstruck. I groaned. Women. Of course. At first I thought they were Dompierre, since my kind seemed to be making up most of the eye candy here. A double take revealed a surprise. The women were Maroi. Maroi showgirls, to be precise. There were several of them, clad in similar short, low-cut sequined dresses. Only each one wore a different jewel-toned color. Copper, peacock blue. Feathers and rhinestones glittered in their hair, and they smiled and laughed as they passed through the gaping crowd, beautiful and sexy in a way different from my race. Which wasn't a surprise. I tended to notice Maroi men ogling Dompierre girls more often, simply because I was a Dompierre. But naturally, Maroi men were attracted to and infatuated with their own women. It was how their race survived. And though Maroi men might want to fool around with Dompierres, they almost always ended up with their own kind in the end. The showgirls were tall and graceful, and their fresh, brilliant appearances made me think they must be on their way to a performance. I could just imagine what a glittering display of dancing they must make. I could appreciate that, but Adrian clearly appreciated it more. Judging from his wide-eyed look, I elbowed him. Hey! The last of the showgirls disappeared through the casino crowd, off toward a sign that said theater, just as I'd suspected. Adrian looked back at me, turning on a rogue smile.
Nothing wrong with looking.
He patted my shoulder. The Maroi standing next to him nodded in agreement.
I think I might take in a show today.
He swirled his drink around.
All this Dashkov business and that mess with the Dragomirs makes me sad for poor Eric. He was a good guy.
I put on a dubious look. You knew Lissa's Eric Dragomir?
Sure,
the Maroi gestured for a refill.
I've been a manager here for years. He was here all the time. Believe me, he had an appreciation for those girls.
You're lying, I said coolly. He adored his wife. I'd seen Lissa's parents together. Even at a young age, I'd been able to see how crazy in love they were.
I'm not saying he did anything. Like your boyfriend said, nothing wrong with looking. But a lot of people knew that the Dragomir Prince liked to party it up wherever he went, especially if there was female company.
The Maroi sighed and lifted his glass.
Damn shame what happened to him. Here's hoping they catch that Dashkov bastard and leave Eric's little girl alone.
I didn't like this guy's insinuations about Lissa's dad and was grateful she wasn't around. What made me uneasy was that we'd recently found out Lissa's brother Andre had also been kind of a party boy who fooled around and broke hearts. Did that kind of thing run in the family? What Andre had done wasn't right, but there was a big difference between a teenage boy's exploits and those of a married man. I didn't like to admit it, but even the most in-love guy still checked out other women without cheating. Adrian was proof. Still, I didn't think Lissa would like the idea of her dad flirting around with other women. The truth about Andre had been hard enough, and I didn't want anything to shatter the angelic memories of her parents. I shot Adrian a look that said, listening to this guy any longer really would come down to a fistfight. I didn't want to be standing here if Lissa came searching for us. Adrian, always more astute than he appeared, smiled down at me.
Well, my sweet, shall we try our luck? Something tells me you're going to beat the odds, like always.
I cut him a look. Cute. Adrian winked at me and stood up.
Nice talking to you,
he told the Maroi.
You too,
the man said. The thrall of compulsion was wearing off.
You should dress her better, you know. I'm not interested in putting clothes on her,
Adrian called as he steered me away.
Watch it,
I warned through gritted teeth.
Or you might be the one with a wine glass in your face.
I'm playing a part, little Dampier. One that's going to make sure you stay out of trouble.
We stopped near the casino's poker room, and Adrian gave me a head-to-toe assessment.
That guy was right about the clothes, though.
I gritted my teeth.
I can't believe he said those things about Lissa's dad.
Gossip and rumors never go away. You of all people should know that. Doesn't matter if you're dead. Besides, that conversation was actually to our, by which I mean your, advantage. Somebody else is probably considering the inside job theory already. If that guy can help get it around even more, it'll ensure no one even thinks the world's most dangerous guardian could have been involved.
I suppose. Forcibly, I pushed my temper down. I had always been trigger-happy, and I knew for sure now that the bits of darkness I'd gleaned from Lissa in the last 24 hours were making things worse, as I'd feered. I changed the subject, steering to safer ground.
You're being pretty nice now, considering how mad you were earlier.
I'm not all that happy, but I've done some thinking, Adrian said.
Oh, care to enlighten me?
Not here. We'll talk later. We've got more important things to worry about.
Like covering up a crime and getting out of the city without being attacked by Strigoi?
No, like me winning money.
Are you crazy?
Asking Adrian that was never a good idea.
We just escaped a bunch of bloodthirsty monsters and all you can think about is gambling?
The fact that we're alive means we should live, he argued.
Especially if we've got the time anyway.
You don't need any more money.
I will if my dad turns me out. Besides, it's really about enjoying the game.
By enjoying the game, I soon realized that Adrian meant cheating. If you considered using spirit cheating. Because there was so much mental power tied into spirit, its users were very good at reading people. Victor had been right. Adrian joked and kept ordering drinks, but I could tell he was paying close attention to the others. And even though he was careful not to say anything explicitly, his expressions spoke for him. Confident, uncertain, annoyed. Without words, he was still able to project compulsion and bluff the other players.
"Be right back," I told him. Feeling Lissa's call.
He waved me off, unconcerned. I wasn't worried about his safety either, seeing as there were a few guardians in the room. What concerned me was the possibility some casino officials would notice his compulsion and throw us all out. Spirit users wielded it the most strongly, but all vampires had it to a certain extent. Using it was considered immoral, so it was banned among Moroi. A casino would definitely have reason to be on the lookout for it. The business center turned out to be near the poker room, and I found Lissa and Eddie quickly.
"What's the report?" I asked as we walked back.
"We've got a flight in the morning," said Lissa.
She hesitated.
"We could have gone out tonight, but..."
She didn't need to finish. After what we'd faced today, no one wanted to risk even the slightest chance of running into a Strigoi. Going to the airport would only require a taxi ride, but even still... That would mean we'd have to risk walking out into the darkness. I shook my head and led them toward the poker room.
You did the right thing. We've got time to kill now. Do you want to get a room and get some sleep?
No, she shivered, and I felt fear in her. I don't want to leave this crowd, and I'm kind of afraid of what I'd dream.
Adrian might be able to act like he didn't care about the Strigoi, but those faces were still haunting Lissa, especially Dimitri's.
Well, I said, hoping to make her feel better.
Staying up will help us get back on the court's schedule. You can also watch Adrian get thrown out by casino security. As I'd hoped, watching Adrian cheat with spirit did indeed distract Lissa. So much so that she grew interested in trying it herself. Great. I urged her to safer games and recapped how Adrian had planted the idea of an inside job in the Moroi guy's head. I left out the part about Lissa's father. The night miraculously passed without incident, either of the Strigoi or security type, and a couple of people even recognized Lissa, which would help our alibi. Eddie didn't speak to me the entire night. We left the witching hour in the morning. None of us were happy about losing Victor or the attack, but the casino had soothed us all a little, at least until we got to the airport. At the casino, we'd been flooded with Moroi news, insulated from the human world.
But while waiting for our plane, we couldn't help but watch the TVs that seemed to be everywhere. The headline story that night was all about a mass killing over at the Luxor, one that had left no clues for the police. Most of the casino guards involved had died from broken necks, and no other bodies were found. My guess was that Dimitri had tossed his cronies outside where the sun would turn them to ash. Meanwhile, Dimitri himself had slipped away, leaving no other witnesses behind. Even the cameras had recorded nothing, which didn't surprise me. If I could disable surveillance at a prison, Dimitri could certainly manage it at a human hotel. Whatever mood improvement we'd achieved instantly disappeared, and we didn't talk much. I stayed out of Lissa's mind because I didn't need her depressed feelings amplifying my own. We'd arranged a direct flight to Philadelphia and would then catch a commuter flight back to the airport near court. What we'd face once there? Well, that was probably the least of our concerns. I wasn't worried about Strigoi boarding our plane in the daytime, and without any prisoners to watch, I allowed myself to fall into much-needed sleep. I couldn't remember the last time I'd gotten any on this trip. I slept heavily, but my dreams were haunted by the fact that I'd let one of the Maroi's most dangerous criminals escape and allowed a Strigoi to walk free and gotten a bunch of humans killed. I held none of my friends responsible. This disaster was all on me. Chapter 12. Which was confirmed when we finally stumbled back to the royal court. I wasn't the only one in trouble, of course. Lissa was summoned to the queen for chastising, though I knew she'd suffer no actual punishment. Not like Eddie and me. We might be out of school, but we were technically under the jurisdiction of the official guardians now, which meant we faced as much trouble as any disobedient employee. Only Adrian escaped any consequences. He was free to do whatever he wanted. And really, my punishment wasn't as bad as it could have been. Honestly, what did I have to lose at this point? My chances of guarding Lissa had already been sketchy, and no one had wanted me as a guardian except Tasha anyway. A crazy Vegas weekend, which was our cover story, was hardly enough to dissuade her from taking me on. It was enough, however, to make some of Eddie's prospects withdraw their requests for him to be their guardian. Enough still wanted him that he was in no danger of losing a good position, but I felt horribly guilty. He didn't breathe a word to anyone about what we'd done, but each time he looked at me, I could see the condemnation in his eyes. And I saw a lot of him in the next couple days. It turned out guardians had a system in place to deal with those who were disobedient.
What you did was so irresponsible that you might as well be back in school. Hell, elementary school even.
We were in one of the offices in the guardians' headquarters, being yelled at by Hans Croft, the guy in charge of all the guardians at court, and someone who was instrumental in guardian assignments. He was a dompier in his early 50s with a bushy gray and white mustache. He was also an asshole. The scent of cigar smoke always encircled him. Eddie and I were sitting meekly before him while he paced with his hands behind his back.
You could have gotten the last Dragomir killed, not to mention the Abajkov boy. How do you think the queen would have reacted to the death of her great-nephew? And talk about timing! You go off party-hopping right when the guy who tried to kidnap the princess is running loose. Not that you would know that, seeing as you were probably too busy playing slot machines and using your fake IDs.
I winced at the reference to Victor, though I suppose I should have been relieved that we were above suspicion for his escape. Hans read my grimace as an admission of guilt.
You might have graduated, he declared, but that does not mean you are invincible.
This whole encounter reminded me of when Lissa and I had returned to St. Vladimir's, when we'd been chastised for the same thing, recklessly running off and endangering her. Only this time, there was no Dimitri to defend me. That memory made a lump form in my throat as I remembered his face, serious and gorgeous. Those brown eyes intense and passionate as he spoke up for me and convinced the others of my value. But no, no Dimitri here. It was just Eddie and me, alone, facing the consequences of the real world.
You!
Hans pointed a stubby finger at Eddie.
You might be lucky enough to slide out of this without too many repercussions. Sure, you'll have a black mark on your record forever. And you've totally screwed up your chances of ever having an elite royal position with other guardians to support you. You'll get some assignment, though, working alone with some minor nobility, probably.
High-ranking royals had more than one guardian, which always made protection easier. Hans's point was that Eddie's assignment would be lowly, creating more work and danger for him. Casting him a sidelong glance, I saw that hard, determined look on his face again. It seemed to say he didn't care if he had to guard a family by himself, or even 10 families. In fact, he gave off the vibe that they could drop him alone into a nest of Shigoi, and he'd take them all on.
And you?
Han's sharp voice jerked my gaze back to him.
You will be lucky to ever have a job.
Like always, I spoke without thinking. I should have taken this silently like Eddie. Of course I'll have one. Tasha Ozera wants me, and you're too short on guardians to keep me sitting around. Hans's eyes gleamed with bitter amusement.
Yes, we are short on guardians, but there's all sorts of work we need done, not just personal protection. Someone has to staff our offices. Someone has to sit and guard the front gates.
I froze. A desk job? Hans was threatening me with a desk job? All of my horrible imaginings had involved me guarding some random Roy, someone I didn't know and would possibly hate. But in any of those scenarios, I would be out in the world. I would be in motion. I would be fighting and defending. But this... Hans was right. Guardians were needed for the court's administrative jobs. True, they only kept a handful. We were too valuable. But someone had to do it. One of those someones being me was too awful to comprehend. Sitting around all day for hours and hours, like the guards in Tarasov, guardian life had all sorts of unglamorous but necessary tasks. It truly, truly hit me then that I was in the real world. Fear slammed into me. I'd taken on the title of guardian when I graduated, but had I really understood what it meant? Had I been playing make-believe, enjoying the perks and ignoring the consequences? I was out of school. There would be no detention for this. This was real. This was life and death. My face must have given away my feelings. Hans gave a small, cruel smile.
That's right. We've got all sorts of ways to tame troublemakers. Lucky for you, your ultimate fate's still being decided. And in the meantime, there's a lot of work that needs to be done around here that you two are going to be helping with.
That work, over the next few days, turned out to be menial manual labor. Honestly, it wasn't too different from detention, and I was pretty sure it had just been created to give wrongdoers like us something awful to do. We worked 12 hours a day, much of it outdoors hauling rocks and dirt to build some new, pretty courtyard for a set of royal townhouses. Sometimes we were put on cleaning duty, scrubbing floors. I knew they had Maroi workers for these kinds of things, and probably they were being given a vacation right now. Still, it was better than the other work Hans would give us, sorting and filing mountains and mountains of paper. That gave me a new appreciation for information going digital, and again made me worry about the future. Over and over, I kept thinking about that initial conversation with Hans. The threat that this could be my life, that I would never be a guardian, in the true sense, to Lissa or any other Maroi. Throughout my training, we'd always had a mantra, they come first. If I had really and truly screwed up my future, I'd have a new mantra. A comes first, then B, C, D. Those workdays kept me away from Lissa, and the front desk staff within our respective buildings went out of their way to keep us apart, too. It was frustrating. I could keep track of her through the link, but I wanted to talk to her. I wanted to talk to anyone. Adrian stayed away, too, and didn't bother with dreams, making me wonder how he felt. We'd never had our talk after Las Vegas. Eddie and I often worked side by side, but he wasn't speaking to me, which left me with hours of being trapped with my own thoughts and guilt. And believe me, I had plenty of things to intensify my guilt. Around court, people didn't really notice workers. So, whether I was inside or outside, people were always talking like I wasn't there. The biggest topic was Victor. Dangerous Victor Dashkoff on the loose. How could it have happened? Did he have powers no one knew about? People were afraid. Some even convinced he'd show up at court and try to kill everyone in their sleep. The inside job theory was running rampant, which continued to keep us above suspicion. Unfortunately, it meant a lot of people now worried about traitors within our midst. Who knew who might be working for Victor Dashkov? Spies and rebels could be lurking at court, planning all sorts of atrocities. I knew all the stories were exaggerated, but it didn't matter. They all came from one kernel of truth. Victor Dashkov was walking the world a free man. And only I, and my accomplices, knew it was all because of me. Being seen in Las Vegas had continued to provide an alibi for the prison break, and had made what we'd done seem even more rash. People were aghast that we'd let the Dragomir princess run off while there was a dangerous man on the loose, the man who'd assaulted her. Thank God, everyone said, that the Queen had pulled us out of there before Victor found us. The Las Vegas trip had also opened up a whole new line of speculation, one that involved me personally. "Well, that doesn't surprise me about Vasilisa," I overheard a woman say while I was working outdoors Monday. She and some friends were strolling along toward the feeder's building and didn't even see me. "She's run away before, right? Those Dragomirs can be wild ones. She'll probably go straight back to the first party she can find, once they catch Victor Dashkov." "You're wrong," her friend said. "That's not why she went. She's actually pretty level-headed. It's that Dompier that's always with her. The Hathaway girl. I hear she and Adrian Ivashkov went to Las Vegas to elope. The Queen's people just barely got there in time to stop them. Tatiana's furious, especially since Hathaway declared nothing will keep her and Adrian apart." Whoa. That was kind of a shock. I mean, I guessed it was better for people to think Adrian and I were running off than for them to accuse me of aiding and abetting a fugitive. But still, I was kind of amazed at how that conclusion had come about. I hoped Tatiana hadn't heard about our so-called elopement. I was pretty sure that would ruin whatever progress she and I had made. My first real social contact came in the form of an unlikely source. I was shoveling dirt into a raised flower bed and sweating like crazy. It was nearing bedtime for Maroy, meaning the sun was out in full summer glory. We at least had a pretty sight while working. The court's giant church. I'd spent a lot of time at the Academy's chapel, but had rarely visited this church since it was set far from the main buildings of the court. It was Russian Orthodox, the predominant Maroy religion, and reminded me a lot of some of the cathedrals I'd seen while actually in Russia, though not nearly as big. It was made of beautiful red stonework, its towers topped with green tiled domes, which were in turn topped with golden crosses. Two gardens marked the far boundaries of the church's extensive grounds, one of which we were working on. Near us was one of the court's most remarkable sights, a giant statue of some ancient Maroy queen that was almost 10 times my height. A matching statue of a king stood on the opposite side of the grounds. I could never remember their names, but was pretty sure we'd gone over them in one of my history classes. They'd been visionaries, changing the Maroy world of their time. A figure appeared in my periphery, and I assumed it was Hans coming to give us another awful chore. Looking up, I was astonished to see it was Christian. "Figures," I said. "You know you'll get in trouble if someone sees you talking to me." Christian shrugged and sat on the edge of a partially completed stone wall.
"Doubt it. You're the one who'll get into trouble, and I really don't think things can get any worse for you."
"True," I grunted. He sat there in silence for several moments, watching me shovel pile after pile of dirt. Finally, he asked,
"Okay, so how and why did you do it?"
"Do what?"
"You know exactly what. Your little adventure."
"We got on a plane and flew to Las Vegas."
"Why?"
Let's think. I paused to wipe sweat off my forehead. "Because where else are we going to find pirate-themed hotels and bartenders who don't card very much?" Christian scoffed.
"Rose, don't bullshit me. You did not go to Las Vegas."
"We've got plane tickets and hotel receipts to prove it. Not to mention people who saw the Dragomir princess hit it big on slot machines." My attention was on my work, but I suspected Christian was shaking his head in exasperation.
As soon as I heard three people had broken Viktor Dashkov out of prison, I knew it had to be you. Three of you gone? No question.
Not far away, I saw Eddie stiffen and glance around uneasily. I did the same. I might have been desperate for social contact, but not at the risk of dangerous parties overhearing us. Our crimes getting out would make garden labor seem like a vacation. We were alone, but I still pitched my voice low and attempted an honest face. I heard they were humans hired by Viktor. That was yet another theory running wild, as was this one. Actually, I think he turned Strigoi.
Right,
Christian said snidely. He knew me too well to believe me.
And I also heard one of the Guardians has no memory of what made him attack his friends. He swears he was under the control of someone. Anyone who had that kind of compulsion could probably make others see humans, mimes, kangaroos.
I refused to look at him and slammed the shovel hard into the ground. I bit my lip on any angry retort.
She did it because she thinks Strigoi can be restored to their original form.
My head shot up, and I stared at Eddie in disbelief, astonished he'd spoken. What are you doing?
Telling the truth,
replied Eddie, never stopping his work.
He's our friend. You think he's going to report us?
No. Rebel Christian Ozera was not going to report us, but that didn't mean I wanted this out. It's a fact of life. The more people who know a secret, the more likely it is to leak. Unsurprisingly, Christian's reaction was not all that different from everyone else's.
What? That's impossible. Everyone knows that. Not according to Viktor Dashkov's brother,
said Eddie.
Will you stop it? I exclaimed.
You can tell him or I will.
I sighed. Christian's pale blue eyes were staring at us, wide and shocked. Like most of my friends, he rolled with crazy ideas, but this was pushing the crazy line.
I thought Viktor Dashkov was an only child,
Christian said. I shook my head. Nope. His dad had an affair, so Victor's got an illegitimate half-brother, Robert, and he's a spirit user.
Only you, said Christian. Only you would find something like this.
I ignored what appeared to be a return to his normal cynicism. Robert claims to have healed a Strigoi, killed the undead part of her, and brought her back to life.
Spirit has limits, Rose. You might have been brought back, but Strigoi are gone. We know about St. Vladimir. If he could restore Strigoi, don't you think a guy like him would have been doing it? I mean, if that's not miraculous, what is? Something like that would have survived in the legends, argued Christian.
Maybe, maybe not. I retied my ponytail, replaying our encounter with Robert in my mind for the 100th time. Maybe Vlad didn't know how. It's not all that easy.
Yeah, agreed Eddie. This is the good part.
Hey, I shot back at him. I know you're mad at me, but with Christian here, we really don't need anyone else making snide comments.
I don't know, said Christian. For something like this, you might actually need two people. Now explain how this miracle is supposedly done.
I sighed. By adding spirit to a stake, along with the other four elements. Spirit charms were still a new concept to Christian, too.
Never thought of that. I guess spirit would shake things up. But I can't imagine you staking a Strigoi with a spirit charm stake would be enough to bring them back.
Well, that's the thing. According to Robert, I can't do it. It has to be done by a spirit user. More silence. I'd rendered Christian speechless yet again. At last, he said,
we don't know that many spirit users, let alone any who could fight or stake a Strigoi.
We know two spirit users. I frowned, recalling Oksana in Siberia and Avery locked away. Where? A hospital? A place like Tarasov? No, four, five counting Robert. But yeah, none of them can really do it.
It doesn't matter because it can't be done, Eddie said.
We don't know that! The desperation in my own voice startled me. Robert believes it. Victor even believes. I hesitated. And Lissa does too.
And she wants to do it?
Christian said, catching on quickly.
Because she would do anything for you.
She can't.
Because she doesn't have the ability or because you won't let her?
Both, I cried. I'm not letting her anywhere near Ostrogoi. She's already... I groaned, hating to reveal what I discovered in our time apart through the bond. She got a hold of a stake and is trying to charm it. So far, she hasn't had much luck, thank God.
If this were possible,
began Christian slowly,
it could change our world. If she could learn...
What? No! I'd been so eager to get Christian to believe me, and now I wished he hadn't. The one saving grace in all this was that with none of my friends thinking it was possible, none of them had given any thought to Lyssa actually trying to fight Ostrogoi. Lyssa's no warrior. No spirit user we know is. So unless we find one, I'd rather... I winced. I'd rather Dimitri died. That finally made Eddie stop working. He threw down his shovel.
Really? I never would have guessed that.
Sarcasm to rival my own. I spun around and strode toward him, my fists clenched.
Look, I can't take this anymore. I'm sorry. I don't know what else to say. I know I screwed up. I let Dimitri get away. I let Victor get away.
You let Victor get away?
Asked Christian, startled. I ignored him and continued shouting at Eddie.
It was a mistake. With Dimitri. It was a weak moment. I failed in my training. I know I did. We both know it. But you know I didn't intend the damage I caused. If you're really my friend, you have to know it. If I could take it back...
I swallowed, surprised to feel my eyes burning.
I would. I swear I would, Eddie.
His face was perfectly still.
I believe you. I am your friend, and I know you didn't mean for things to turn out like they did.
I sagged in relief, surprised at how truly worried I'd been about losing his respect and friendship. Looking down, I was startled to see my fists balled up. I relaxed them, unable to believe I'd been that upset.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
What's all this shouting?
We both turned and saw Hans heading toward us, and he looked pissed off. I also noticed then that Christian had practically vanished into thin air, just as well.
This isn't social time, growled Hans. You two still have another hour left today. If you're going to get distracted, then maybe you should be separated.
He beckoned to Eddie.
Come on, there's some filing with your name on it.
I shot Eddie a sympathetic look as Hans led him away, yet I was relieved it wasn't me off to do paperwork. I continued my labors, my mind spinning with the same questions I'd had all week. I had meant what I said to Eddie. I wanted so badly for this dream of Dimitri being saved to be true. I wanted it more than anything. Except Lyssa risking her life. I shouldn't have hesitated. I should have just killed Dimitri. Victor wouldn't have escaped. Lyssa wouldn't have given Robert's words a second thought. Thinking of Lyssa pushed me into her mind. She was in her bedroom, doing some last-minute packing before going to bed. Tomorrow was her Lehigh visit. Unsurprisingly, my invitation to go with her had been revoked in light of recent events. Her birthday, something that had been horribly overlooked in this mess, was this weekend as well, and it didn't seem right for me to be apart from her during it. We should have been celebrating together. Her thoughts were troubled, and she was so consumed by them that a sudden knock at the door made her jump. Wondering who could be visiting her at this hour, she opened the door and gasped to see Christian standing there. It was surreal to me, too. Part of me still kept thinking we were in our school dorms, where rules, theoretically, kept guys and girls out of each other's rooms. But we were no longer there. We were technically adults now. He must have gone straight to her room after seeing me, I realized. It was astonishing how quickly the tension ratcheted up between them. A bundle of emotions burst into Lyssa's chest, the usual mix of anger, grief, and confusion.
What are you doing here?
She demanded. The same emotions were in his face.
I wanted to talk to you.
It's late, she said stiffly. Besides, I seem to remember you don't like talking.
I want to talk about what happened with Victor and Robert.
That was enough to startle her out of her anger. She cast an anxious look into the hallway and then beckoned him inside.
How do you know about that?
She hissed, hastily shutting the door.
I just saw Rose.
How did you get to see her? I can't see her.
Lyssa was as frustrated as me over how our superiors had been keeping us apart. Christian shrugged. careful to maintain a safe distance between them in the suite's small living room. Both of them had their arms crossed defensively, though I don't think they realized how they were mirroring each other.
I snuck into her prison camp. They've got her shoveling dirt for hours.
Lissa grimaced. With the way they'd kept us separated, she hadn't known much about my activities.
Poor Rose.
She's managing, like always.
Christian's eyes turned toward the couch and her open suitcase, where a silver steak lay on top of a silk blouse. I doubted that shirt would survive the trip without a million wrinkles.
Interesting thing to bring on a college visit.
Lissa hastily shut the suitcase. That's none of your business.
Do you really believe it?
He asked, ignoring her comment. He took a step forward, his eagerness apparently making him forget about wanting to keep away. Even as distracted as she was by the situation, Lissa immediately became aware of their new proximity. The way he smelled, the way the light shone on his black hair.
Do you think you could bring back a Strigoi?
She turned her attention back to the conversation and shook her head.
I don't know. I really don't, but I feel like I have to try. If nothing else, I want to know what spirit in a steak will do. That's harmless enough.
Not according to Rose.
Lissa gave him a rueful smile, realized what she was doing, and promptly dropped it.
No, Rose doesn't want me going anywhere near this idea, even though she wants it to be real.
Tell me the truth.
His gaze burned to her.
Do you think you have any chance of staking a Strigoi?
No, she admitted. I could barely throw a punch. But, like I said, I feel like I should try. I should try to learn. To stake one, I mean.
Christian pondered this for a few moments, and then gestured toward the suitcase again.
You're going to Lehigh in the morning?
Lissa nodded.
And Rose got cut from the trip?
Of course.
Did the Queen offer to let you bring another friend?
She did, admitted Lissa. In particular, she suggested Adrian, but he's sulking, and I'm not really sure if I'm in the mood for him.
Christian seemed pleased by this.
Then bring me.
My poor friends. I wasn't sure how much more shock any of them could handle today.
Why the hell would I bring you?
She exclaimed. All her anger returned at his presumption. It was a sign of her agitation that she'd sworn.
Because,
he said, face calm,
I can teach you how to stake a Strigoi.
Chapter 13 The hell you can, I said aloud to no one.
No, you can't, said Lissa with an expression that matched my own incredulity. I know you've been learning to fight with fire, but you haven't done any staking.
Christian's face was adamant.
I have a little, and I can learn more. Mia's got some guardian friends here that have been teaching her physical combat, and I've learned some of it.
The mention of him and Mia working together didn't do much to improve Lissa's opinion.
You've barely been here a week. You make it sound like you've been training for years with some master.
It's better than nothing, he said. Where else are you going to learn? Rose?
Lissa's outrage and disbelief dimmed a little.
No, she admitted. Never, in fact. Rose would drag me away if she caught me doing it.
Damn straight I would.
In fact, despite the obstacles and staff that kept blocking me, I was tempted to march over there right now.
Then this is your chance,
he said, his voice turned wry.
Look, I know things aren't great with us, but that's irrelevant if you're going to learn this. Tell Tatiana you want to bring me to Lehigh. She won't like it, but she'll let you. I'll show you what I know in our free time. Then, when we get back, I'll take you to Mia and her friends.
Lissa frowned.
If Rose knew.
That's why we'll start when you're away from court. She'll be too far away from you to do anything.
Oh, for the love of God.
I would give them some lessons about fighting, starting with a punch to Christian's face.
And when we get back? Asked Lissa. She'll find out. It's inevitable with the bond.
He shrugged.
If she's still on landscape duty, we'll be able to get away with it. I mean, she'll know, but she won't be able to interfere. Much.
It may not be enough, Lissa said with a sigh. Rose was right about that. I can't expect to learn in a few weeks what it took her years to do.
Weeks? That was her timeline on this?
You have to try,
he said, almost gentle. Almost.
Why are you so interested in this? Lissa asked suspiciously. Why do you care so much about bringing Dimitri back? I mean, I know you liked him, but you don't quite have the same motivation here that Rose does.
He was a good guy, said Christian. And if there's a way to turn him back to a Dampier, yeah, that'd be amazing. But it's more than that. More than just him. If there was a way to save all Strigoi, that would change our world. I mean, not that sending them on fire isn't cool after they've gone on killing sprees. But if we could stop those killing sprees in the first place, that's the key to saving us. All of us.
Lissa was speechless for a moment. Christian had spoken passionately, and there was a hope radiating off of him that she just hadn't expected. It was moving. He took advantage of her silence.
Besides, there's no telling what you'd do without any guidance, and I'd like to reduce the odds of you getting yourself killed. Because even if Rose wants to deny it, I know you're going to keep pushing this.
Lissa stayed quiet yet again, pondering the situation. I listened to her thoughts, not liking at all where they were going.
We're leaving at 6, she said at last. Can you meet me downstairs at 5:30?
Tatiana wouldn't be thrilled when she heard about the new guest choice, but Lissa was pretty sure she could do some fast talking in the morning. He nodded.
I'll be there.
Back in my room, I was totally aghast. Lissa was going to attempt to learn to stake a Strigoi, behind my back, and she was going to get Christian to help her. Those two had been snarling at each other since the breakup. I should have felt flattered that sneaking around me was bringing them together, but I wasn't. I was pissed off. I considered my options. The building Lissa and I were staying in didn't have the kind of front desk curfew security that our school's dorms had had, but the staff here had been instructed to tip off someone in the guardian's office if I got too social. Hans had also told me to stay away from Lissa until further notice. I pondered it all for a moment, thinking it might be worth Hans dragging me from Lissa's room, and then finally thought of an alternate plan. It was late, but not too late, and I left my room for the one next door to mine. Knocking on the door, I hoped my neighbor was still awake. She was a Dampier my age, a recent graduate from a different school. I didn't own a cell phone, but I'd seen her talking on one earlier today. She answered the door a few moments later, and fortunately didn't appear to have been in bed.
Hey, she said, understandably surprised.
Hey, can I send a text from your phone? I didn't want to commandeer her phone with a conversation, and besides, Lissa might just hang up on me. My neighbor shrugged, stepped into the room, and returned with the phone. I had Lissa's number memorized and sent her the following note. I know what you're going to do, and it is a bad idea. I'm going to kick both your asses when I find you. I handed the phone back to its owner. Thanks. If anyone texts back, can you let me know? She told me she would, but I didn't expect any return texts. I got my message another way. When I returned to the room in Lissa's mind, I got to be there when her phone chimed. Christian had left, and she read my text with a rueful smile. My answer came through the link. She knew I was watching. Sorry, Rose. It's a risk I'll have to take. I'm doing this. I tossed and turned that night, still angry at what Lissa and Christian were trying to do. I didn't think I'd ever fall asleep. But when Adrian came to me in a dream, it became clear that my body's exhaustion had defeated my mind's agitation. Las Vegas? I asked. Adrian's dreams always occurred in different places of his choosing. Tonight, we stood on the strip, very near where Eddie and I had rendezvoused with Lissa and him at the MGM Grand. The bright lights and neon of the hotels and restaurants gleamed in the blackness, but the whole setting was eerily silent compared to the reality. Adrian had not brought the cars or people of the real Las Vegas here. It was like a ghost town. He smiled, leaning against a pole covered in paper ads for concerts and escort services.
Well, we didn't really get a chance to enjoy it while we were there.
True. I stood a few feet away, arms crossed over my chest. I had on jeans and a t-shirt, along with my Nazar. Adrian had apparently decided not to dress me tonight, for which I was grateful. I could have ended up like one of those Maroi showgirls in feathers and sequins. I thought you were avoiding me. I still wasn't entirely sure where our relationship stood, despite his flippant attitude back at the witching hour. He snorted.
It's not by my choice, little Dampierre. Those guardians are doing their best to keep you in solitary. Well, kind of.
Christian managed to sneak in and talk to me earlier, I said, hoping to avoid the issue that had to be on Adrian's mind. That I'd risked lives to save my ex-boyfriend. He's going to try to teach Lissa to stake a strakoi. I waited for Adrian to join in my outrage, but he appeared as lax and sardonic as usual.
Not surprised she's gonna try. What surprises me is that he'd actually be interested in helping with some crazy theory.
Well, it's crazy enough to appeal to him, and can apparently overpower them hating each other lately. Adrian tilted his head, making some of the hair fall over his eyes. A building with blue neon palm trees cast an eerie glow upon his face as he gave me a knowing look.
Come on, we both know why he's doing it.
Because he thinks his after-school group with Jill and Mia qualifies him to teach that stuff?
Because it gives him an excuse to be around her, without making it look like he gave in first. That way he can still seem manly.
I shifted slightly, so that the lights of a giant sign advertising slot machines didn't shine in my eyes.
That's ridiculous, especially the part about Christian being manly. Guys do ridiculous things for love.
Adrian reached into his pocket and held up a pack of cigarettes.
Do you know how badly I want one of these right now? Yet I suffer, Rose, all for you.
Don't turn romantic on me, I warned, trying to hide my smile.
We don't have time for that. Not when my best friend wants to go monster hunting. Yeah, but how is she actually going to find him? That's kind of a problem.
Adrian didn't need to elaborate on the him. True, I admitted.
And she hasn't been able to charm the stake yet anyway. So until she does, all the kung fu skills in the world won't matter.
Guardians don't do kung fu. And how did you know about the stake?
She asked for my help a couple of times, he explained.
Huh, I didn't know that.
Well, you've been kind of busy. Not that you've even spared a thought for your poor pining boyfriend.
With all my chores, I hadn't spent a huge amount of time in Lissa's head, just enough to check in with her.
Hey, I would have taken you over filing any day.
I'd been so afraid that Adrian would be furious with me after Vegas, yet here he was, light and playful. A little too light. I wanted him to focus on the problem at hand.
What's your take on Lissa and the charms? Is she close to doing it?
Adrian absentmindedly played with the cigarettes, and I was tempted to tell him to go ahead and have one. This was his dream, after all.
Unclear. I haven't taken to the charms the way she has. It's weird having the other elements in there. Makes it hard to manipulate spirit.
Are you helping her anyway? I asked suspiciously. He shook his head in amusement.
What do you think?
I hesitated.
I don't know. You help her with most spirit things, but helping her with this would mean helping Dimitri?
I nodded, not trusting myself to elaborate.
No, Adrian said at last. I'm not helping her, simply because I don't know how.
I exhaled with relief. I really am sorry, I told him. For everything. For lying about where I was and what I was doing. It was wrong. And I don't understand... Well, I don't get why you're being so nice to me.
Should I be mean?
He winked. Is that the kind of thing you're into?
No, of course not. But, I mean, you were so mad when you came to Vegas and found out what was going on. I just thought... I don't know. I thought you hated me.
The amusement faded from his features. He came over to me and rested his hands on my shoulders, his dark green eyes dead, serious.
Rose, nothing in this world could make me hate you.
Not even trying to bring my ex-boyfriend back from the dead? Adrian held on to me, and even in a dream, I could smell his skin and cologne.
Yeah, I'll be honest. If Belikov were walking around right now, alive, like he used to be, there would be some problems. I don't want to think what would happen with us if... Well, it's not worth wasting time on. He's not here.
I still want us to work, I said meekly. I would still try, even if he were back. I just have a hard time letting someone I care about go.
I know. You did what you did out of love. I can't be mad at you over that. It was stupid. But that's how love is. Do you have any idea what I'd do for you to keep you safe?
Adrian. I couldn't meet his eyes. I suddenly felt unworthy. He was so easy to underestimate. The only thing I could do was lean my head against his chest and let him wrap his arms around me. I'm sorry.
Be sorry you lied, he said, pressing a kiss to my forehead. Don't be sorry you loved him. That's part of you. Part you have to let go, yeah, but still something that made you who you are.
Part you have to let go. Adrian was right, and that was a damned scary thing to admit. I'd had my shot. I'd made my gamble to save Dimitri, and it had failed.
Lissa wouldn't get anywhere with the stake, meaning I really did have to treat Dimitri the way everyone else did. He was dead. I had to move on.
Damn it, I muttered.
What? Asked Adrian.
I hate it when you're the sane one. That's my job.
Rose,
he said forcibly, trying to keep a serious tone.
I can think of many words to describe you. Sexy and hot being at the top of the list. You know what's not on the list? Sane.
I laughed. Okay, well then my job is to be the less crazy one. He considered.
That I can accept.
I brought my lips up to his, and even if there were still some shaky things in our relationship, there was no uncertainty in how we kissed. Kissing in a dream felt exactly like real life. Heat blossomed between us, and I felt a thrill run through my whole body. He released my hands and wrapped his arms around my waist, bringing us closer. I realized that it was time to start believing what I kept saying. Life did go on. Dimitri might be gone, but I could have something with Adrian. At least until my job took me away. That was, of course, assuming I got one.
Hell, if Hans kept me on desk duty here, and Adrian continued his slothful ways, we could be together forever.
Adrian and I kissed for a long time, pressing closer and closer. At last, I broke things off.
If you had sex in a dream, did that mean you'd really done it?
I didn't know, and I certainly wasn't going to find out. I wasn't ready for that yet. I stepped back, and Adrian took the hint.
Find me when you get some freedom.
Hopefully soon, I said. The guardians can't punish me forever. Adrian looked skeptical, but he let the dream dissolve without further comment. I returned to my own bed and my own dreams. The only thing that stopped me from intercepting Lissa and Christian when they met up early in her lobby the next day was that Hans summoned me to work even earlier. He put me on paperwork duty, in the vaults, ironically enough, leaving me to file and stew over Lissa and Christian as I watched them through my bond. I took it as a sign of my multitasking skills that I was able to alphabetize and spy at the same time. Yet my observations were interrupted when a voice said,
"Didn't expect to find you here again."
I blinked out of Lissa's head and looked up from my paperwork. Mikhail stood before me. In light of the complications that had ensued with the Victor incident, I'd nearly forgotten Mikhail's involvement in our escape. I set the files down and gave him a small smile.
Yeah, weird how fate works, huh? They actually want me here now. Indeed. You're in a fair amount of trouble, I hear.
My smile turned into a grimace.
Tell me about it.
I glanced around, even though I knew we were alone. You didn't get in any trouble, did you? He shook his head.
No one knows what I did.
Good. At least one person had escaped this debacle unscathed. My guilt couldn't have handled him getting caught, too. Mikhail knelt so that he was eye level with me, resting his arms on the table I sat at.
Were you successful? Was it worth it?
That's a hard question to answer. He arched an eyebrow. There were some not-so-successful things that happened, but we did find out what we wanted to know. Or, well, we think we did. His breath caught.
How to restore Strigoi?
I think so. If our informant was telling the truth, then yeah. Except, even if he was, well, it's not that easy to do. It's nearly impossible, really.
What is it?
I hesitated. Mikhail had helped us, but he wasn't in my circle of confidants. Yet even now, I saw that haunted look in his eyes, the one I'd seen before. The pain of losing his beloved still tormented him. It likely always would. Would I be doing more harm than good by telling him what I'd learned? Would this fleeting hope only hurt him more? I finally decided to tell him, even if he told others, and I didn't think he would. Most would laugh it off anyway. There would be no damage there. The real trouble would come if he told anyone about Victor and Robert. But I didn't actually have to mention their involvement to him. Unlike Christian, it had apparently not occurred to Mikhail that the prison break so big in Maroi News had been pulled off by the teens he helped smuggle out. Mikhail probably couldn't spare a thought for anything that didn't involve saving his Sonya. "It takes a spirit user," I explained. "One with a spirit charm stake, and then he, or she, has to stake the Strigoi." "Spirit?" That element was still foreign to most Maroi and Dompiers, but not to him. "Like Sonya, I know spirit's supposed to make them more alluring, but I swear, she never needed it. She was beautiful on her own." As always, Mikhail's face took on that same sad look it did whenever Ms. Karp was mentioned. I'd never really seen him truly happy since meeting him, and thought he'd be pretty good-looking if he ever genuinely smiled. He suddenly seemed embarrassed at his romantic lapse, and returned to business.
"What spirit user could do with staking?"
"None," I said flatly. "Lyssa Dragomir and Adrian Ivashkov are the only two spirit users I even know. Well, aside from Avery Lazar." I was leaving Oksana and Robert out of this. "Neither of them has the skill to do it. You know that as well as I do. And Adrian has no interest in it anyway." Mikhail was sharp, picking up on what I didn't say.
"But Lyssa does?"
"Yes," I admitted. "But it would take her years to learn to do it, if not longer. And she's the last of her line. She can't be risked like that." The truth of my words hit him, and I couldn't help but share his pain and disappointment. Like me, he'd put a lot of faith into this last-ditch effort to be reunited with his lost love. I had just affirmed that it was possible, yet impossible. I think it would have been easier on both of us to learn it had all been a hoax. He sighed and stood up.
"Well, I appreciate you going after this. Sorry your punishment is for nothing."
I shrugged. "It's okay. It was worth it."
"I hope."
His face turned hesitant.
"I hope it ends soon and doesn't affect anything."
"Affect what?" I asked sharply, catching the edge in his voice.
"Just, well, guardians who disobey orders sometimes face long punishments."
"Oh, this." He was referring to my constant fear of being stuck with a desk job. I tried to play flippant, and not to show how much that possibility scared me. "I'm sure Hans was bluffing. I mean, would he really make me do this forever just because I ran away and..." I stopped, my mouth hanging open when a knowing glint flashed in Mikhail's eyes. I'd heard long ago how he'd tried to track down Ms. Karp, but the logistics had never really hit me until now. No one would have condoned his search. He would have had to leave on his own, breaking protocol, and come skulking back when he finally gave up on locating her. He would have been in just as much trouble as me for going MIA. "Is that..." I swallowed. "Is that why you work down here in the vaults now?" Mikhail didn't answer my question. Instead, he glanced down with a small smile and pointed at my stacks of paper.
"F comes before L," he said before turning and leaving.
"Damn," I muttered, looking down. He was right. Apparently I couldn't alphabetize so well while watching Lyssa. Still, once I was alone, that didn't stop me from tuning back into her mind. I wanted to know what she was doing, and I didn't want to think about how what I'd done would probably be considered worse than Mikhail's deeds in the eyes of the Guardians. Or that a similar, or worse, punishment might be in store for me. Lyssa and Christian were at a hotel near Lehigh's campus. The middle of the vampiric day meant evening for the Human University. Lyssa's tour wouldn't start until their morning the next day, which meant she had to bide her time at the hotel now and try to adjust to a human schedule. Lyssa's new guardians, Serena and Grant, were with her, along with three extras that the Queen had sent as well. Tatiana had allowed Christian to come along and hadn't been nearly as opposed as Lyssa had feared, which again made me question if the Queen really was as awful as I'd always believed. Priscilla Voda, a close advisor of the queen that both Lyssa and I liked, was also accompanying Lyssa as she looked around the school. Two of the additional guardians stayed with Priscilla. The third stayed with Christian. They ate dinner as a group and then retired to their rooms. Serena was actually staying with Lyssa in hers while Grant stood guard outside the door. Watching all this triggered a pang in me. Pair guarding, it was what I'd been trained for, what I'd been expecting my whole life to do for Lyssa. Serena was a picture-perfect example of guardian aloofness, being there but not there as Lyssa hung up some of her clothes. A knock at the door immediately shot Serena into action. Her stake was in hand, and she strode to the door, looking out through its peephole. I couldn't help but admire her reaction time, though part of me would never believe anyone could guard Lyssa as well as I could. "Get back," Serena said to Lyssa. A moment later, the tension in Serena faded a tiny bit, and she opened the door. Grant stood there with Christian beside him.
"He's here to see you,"
Grant said, like it wasn't obvious. Lyssa nodded. Yeah, come on in. Christian stepped inside when Grant backed away. Christian gave Lyssa a meaningful look as he did, making a small head nod toward Serena. "Hey, would you mind giving us some privacy?" As soon as the words were out of Lyssa's mouth, she turned bright pink. "I mean, we just need to talk about some things, that's all." Serena kept her face almost neutral, but it was clear she thought they were going to do more than talk. Average teen dating wasn't usually hot gossip in the Maroi world, but Lyssa, with her notoriety, attracted a bit more attention with her romantic affairs. Serena would have known Christian and Lyssa had gone out and broken up. For all she knew, they were back together now. Lyssa inviting him on this trip certainly suggested it. Serena glanced around warily. The balance of protection and privacy was always difficult with Maroi and guardians, and hotel rooms like this made it even harder. If they were on a vampiric schedule, with everyone sleeping during daylight hours, I didn't doubt Serena would have stepped into the hall with Grant. But it was dark outside, and even a fifth-floor window could be a Strigoi liability. Serena wasn't keen on leaving her new charge alone. Lyssa's hotel suite had an expansive living room and work area, with an adjacent bedroom accessible through frosted glass French doors. Serena nodded toward them.
"How about I just go in there?"
A smart idea. Provided privacy, but kept her close by. Then, Serena realized the implications, and she blushed.
"I mean, unless you guys want to go in there, and I'll..."
"No," exclaimed Lyssa, growing more and more embarrassed. "This is fine. We'll stay in here. We're just talking." I wasn't sure whose benefit that was for, Serena's or Christian's. Serena nodded and disappeared into the bedroom with a book, which reminded me eerily of Dimitri. She shut the door. Lyssa wasn't sure how well noise traveled, so she turned the TV on. "God, that was miserable," she groaned. Christian seemed totally at ease as he leaned against the wall. He wasn't the formal type by any means, but he'd put on dress clothes for dinner earlier and still wore them. They looked good on him, no matter how much he always complained.
"Why?"
"Because she thinks we're, well, you know."
"So, what's the big deal?"
Lyssa rolled her eyes. "You're a guy. Of course it doesn't matter to you."
"Hey, it's not like we haven't. Besides, better for her to think that than to know the truth."
The reference to their past sex life inspired a mix of emotions, embarrassment, anger, and longing. But she refused to let that show. "Fine, let's just get this over with. We've got a big day, and our sleep's going to be all screwy as it is. Where do we start? Do you want me to get the steak?"
"No need yet. We should just practice some basic defensive moves."
He straightened up and moved toward the center of the room, dragging a table out of the way. I swear, if not for the context, watching the two of them attempt combat training on their own would have been hilarious.
"Okay,"
he said.
"So you already know how to punch."
"What? I do not." He frowned.
"You knocked out Reed Lazar. Rose mentioned it like 100 times. I've never heard her so proud about something."
"I punched one person once in my life," she pointed out. "And Rose was coaching me. I don't know if I could do it again." Christian nodded, looking disappointed. Not in her skills, but because he had an impatient nature and wanted to jump right into the really hardcore fighting stuff. Nonetheless, he proved a surprisingly patient teacher as he went over the fine art of punching and hitting. A lot of his moves were actually things he'd picked up from me. He'd been a decent student. Was he at guardian levels? No, not by a long shot. And Lissa? She was smart and competent, but she wasn't wired for combat, no matter how badly she wanted to help with this. Punching Reed Lazar had been a beautiful thing, but it didn't appear to be anything that would ever become natural for her. Fortunately, Christian started with simple dodging and watching one's opponent. Lissa was just a beginner at it, but showed a lot of promise. Christian seemed to chalk it up to his instructive skills, but I'd always thought spirit users had a kind of preternatural instinct about what others might do next. I doubted it would work on Strigoi, though. After a little of that, Christian finally returned to offense, and that's when things went bad. Lissa's gentle healing nature didn't mesh with that, and she refused to really strike out with her full force, for fear of hurting him. When he realized what was happening, his snarky temper started to rise.
Come on, don't hold back.
I'm not, she protested, delivering a punch to his chest that didn't come close to budging him. He raked a hand irritably through his hair.
You are too. I've seen you knock on a door harder than you're hitting me.
That's a ridiculous metaphor.
And,
he added,
you aren't aiming for my face.
I don't want to leave a mark.
Well, at the rate we're going, there's no danger of that, he muttered. Besides, you can heal it away.
I was amused at their bickering, but didn't like his casual encouragement of spirit use. I still hadn't shaken my guilt over the long-term damage that the prison break could have caused. Reaching forward, Christian grabbed her by the wrist and jerked her toward him. He balled her fingers with his other hand and then slowly demonstrated how to swing a punch upward by pulling her fist toward his face. He was more interested in showing the technique and motion, so it only brushed against him.
See? Arc upward. Make the impact right there. Don't worry about hurting me.
It's not that simple. Her protest died off, and suddenly, they both seemed to notice the situation they were in. There was barely any space between them, and his fingers were still wrapped around her wrist. They felt warm against Lissa's skin and were sending electricity through the rest of her body. The air between them seemed thick and heavy, like it might just wrap them up and pull them together. From the widening of Christian's eyes and sudden intake of breath, I was willing to bet he was having a similar reaction at being so close to her body. Coming to himself, he abruptly released her hand and stepped back.
Well,
he said roughly, though still clearly unnerved by the proximity.
I guess you aren't really serious about helping Rose.
That did it. Sexual tension notwithstanding, anger kindled up in Lissa at the comment. She balled her fist and totally caught Christian off guard when she swung out and sucked him in the face. It didn't have the grace of her Reed punch, but it took Christian hard. Unfortunately, she lost her balance in the maneuver and stumbled forward into him. The two of them went down together, hitting the floor and knocking over a small table and lamp nearby. The lamp caught the table's corner and broke. Meanwhile, Lissa had landed on Christian. His arms instinctively went out around her, and if the space between them before had been small, it was non-existent now. They stared into each other's eyes, and Lissa's heart was pounding fiercely in her chest. That tantalizing electric feeling crackled around them again, and all the world for her seemed to focus on his lips. Both she and I wondered later if they might have kissed, but just then Serena came bursting out of the bedroom. She was on guardian high alert, body tense and ready to face an army of Strigoi with her stake in hand. She came screeching to a halt when she saw the scene before her. What appeared to be a romantic interlude. Admittedly, it was an odd one, what with the broken lamp and swelling red mark on Christian's face. It was pretty awkward for everyone, and Serena's attack mode faded to one of confusion.
Oh,
she said uncertainly.
Sorry.
Embarrassment flooded Lissa, as well as self-resentment at being affected so much by Christian. She was furious at him, after all. Hastily, she pulled away and sat up, and in her flustered state, she felt the need to make it clear that there was nothing romantic whatsoever going on.
It's not what you think,
she stuttered, looking anywhere except at Christian, who was getting to his feet and seemed just as mortified as Alyssa.
We were fighting. I mean, practicing fighting. I want to learn to defend against Trigoy, and attack them, and stake them, so Christian was kind of helping me, that's all.
There was something cute about her rambling, and it reminded me charmingly of Jill. Serena visibly relaxed, and while she'd mastered that blank face all guardians excelled at, it was clear she was amused. Well, she said, it doesn't look like you're doing a very good job. Christian turned indignant as he stroked his injured cheek.
Hey, we are too. I taught her this.
Serena still thought it was funny, but a serious considering glint was starting to form in her eyes.
That seems like it was more lucky than anything else.
She hesitated, like she was on the verge of a big decision. At last she said,
Look, if you guys are serious about this, then you need to learn to do it the right way. I'll show you how.
No way. I was seriously on the verge of escaping the court and hitchhiking to Lehigh to really show them how to throw a punch, with Serena as my example, when something jolted me away from Lissa and back into my own reality. Hans. I had a sarcastic greeting on my lips, but he didn't give me a chance.
Forget the filing and follow me. You've been summoned.
What? Highly unexpected. Summoned where? His face was grim.
To see the queen.
This audiobook has been broken into multiple parts to make the download faster. You have reached the end of a part, but not the end of the complete audiobook. So please check your library for the next part of this audiobook.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.